Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tasmad Bhagavat Swarupam Eva Namaha. Okay, let me find through as I should. Therefore, the Lord's name is identical with the Lord Himself. Okay, that's the conclusion. The name is the Bhagavat Swarupa. It's the very self of the Lord. Spashtam Choktam Sri Narada Pancharatri Ashtaksharam Udishya Vyaktam Hi Bhagavan Eva Sakshan Narayanak Swayam Ashtakshara Swarupena Mukeshu Parivartite Iti. This is said unequivocally in Sri Narada Pancharatra in reference to the eight syllable mantra. The Supreme Lord Narayan appears in person within their mouths in his identity as the eight-syllable mantra. Okay. Upanishatsu cha pranavam uddishya. And the Upanishads state in regard to the syllable Om. Om is everything. Om Kara Evedam Sarvam. And also, Om Ityet Tad Aksharam Idam Sarvam. This syllable Om is everything in this world. And also another statement in the Upanishads. Let's see, references here. That first short statement was from the Chandogya Upanishad, second one from the Mandukya Upanishad, and this one we don't know where it comes from. Two verses from Samupanishad. Pranavohi param brahma pranavascha param smritam Apurvo nantaro bahyo anapara pranavo vyayaha. Pranava Om is the supreme truth. The scriptures reveal that pranava is supreme. Without a previous cause, apurva, without inside or outside, anantara, unanantara, abahya, without inside or outside. Without any rival, anapara, and infallible, avyaya. Pranava is the origin, middle, and end of everything. If one so understands pranava, sarvasya pranavo hyadir, madhyamantas chataivacha, evam hi pranavam gyatva vyashnute tadanantaram. If one so understands pranava, he will eventually attain the supreme. Okay, and there's two more verses. It continues. It's four verses. Pranavam hi svaram vidyat sarvasya vidyayestitam Sarvavyapinam Omkaram Matvadiro Nashochati. Know that Pranava is the Supreme Lord, sitting in the hearts of all living beings. Okay, so you may say, well, Omkar doesn't count as the name of the Lord, it's impersonal. But here it says Pranava is Ishvara, the Supreme Lord. If an intelligent person meditates on the all-pervading Om, he will never have cause to lament. Om is immeasurable and infinite. Amatro, immeasurable. Anantamatras, infinite in measure. It is the Amatro, Anantamatras, Cha, Dvaitas, Yopashamak, Shivaha, Omkaro, Vidito, Yena, Samudir, Netaro, Janaha. If an intelligent person meditates, Om is immeasurable and infinite. It is the all-auspicious destroyer of duality. No one is a sage except the knower of Om. Okay, so these to substantiate the claim or the conclusion that the name of the Lord is the Lord himself. And that's a general statement. Two specific examples are given. How the 18th syllable, how it said somewhere that the 18th syllable mantra addressed to Vishnu, Gopal mantra, 18th syllable Gopal mantra, is Narayan himself. And then this statement about Om being Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, it's himself. Okay, commentary. There are many mantras taught in the Pancharatra scriptures, by which the Supreme Lord is worshipped in his various forms. They should be properly received from authorized Vaishnavas by instruction and formal initiation. And so in books, the exact words of the mantras are usually not fully divulged. That means they don't tell you the exact words of the mantra, syllables of the mantra, not in the regular order. You're not supposed to learn it just from a book. The mantras are frequently referred to simply by the names of the Lord they worship and the number of syllables they contain. The Pancharatras teach practical methods of worship, of worshiping God, for persons not privileged by Brahminical status to be able to study the Vedas. Pancharatras are especially for those who aren't allowed to study the Vedas. In the Vedas, especially the philosophical portions known as Upanishads, attention is focused more on the apparently impersonal name Om. Many of those interested in studying the Upanishads are more or less impersonalists, or at least not yet ready to commit to worshipping any particular Lord. Pranava Om is, as said, immeasurable and infinite, amatro nantamatras cha. As non-different from the Supreme Lord, it is smaller than the atom and bigger than the entire creation, because he is, and it is the same as he. It is the most suitable form of sound, yet from it evolve all concrete things. Only one who knows what Omkar refers to should be considered a real sage. The less experienced think that Om is not personal, but by continued chanting of Om, they may eventually graduate to personal devotion to Lord Vishnu in one of his appearances. Okay, so impersonalists are attracted to Om but it can help them become devotees. Yes, Damodar, Gopal Prabhu.
The first point you said in your purport. Sorry. First of all, amantram is smaller than atom.
What word does?
Amatra.
Amatra.
Smaller than atom?
Well, it doesn't. It means it has no measure. No. That could mean, yeah, it's infinitely small. It could mean that.
Okay, thank you.
But there are things that just can't be quantified. Something that's abstract, doesn't have a size or a shape or a weight that you can measure. That's also immeasurable. Something that just can't be explained mathematically. Immeasurable. Well, that's anantamatra, infinitely big.
I have a question about this statement. Mantras are not to be learned in books, but rather received through oral reception.
Yes.
So that's why you usually don't find them in books. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, well, in the Puranas we see Iti Shodasakam Namnam Kalikal Masanam. There in the Puranas it's mentioned.
Well, there the mantra is given.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's Hare Krishna mantra. That's public. That's
okay. One time there was somebody I met.
And also, it has the words in different order.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And one time I met somebody on the street, and he read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I guess he was a scholar. He was criticizing Prabhupada because there was nowhere in the text where it said the Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, but Prabhupada puts it in, or like in his translations, it says Nama Sankirtan, or it says Hare Kirtan, or
yes.
Krishna, the names of Krishna, Krishna Nama Sankirtan.
But at least parts of the mantra are mentioned in the poems of Rupa Goswami and elsewhere. Mm. Not in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but Chaitanya Charitamrita is part of a body of literature written by, you know, members of the same sampradaya. So if you look in other books, you'll see the Hare Krishna mantra.
And can we also use that as the argument, like that you're saying, that mantras are usually received through oral reception and not usually in books? Is that,
well, except for the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is freely distributed and broadcast all over the place. So it's not kept secret. You don't have to read any particular book to find the Hare Krishna mantra. Just go down to downtown on a Saturday evening, you know, and meet the kirtan party. You'll be introduced to the Hare Krishna mantra. It's being broadcast all over the, you know, publicly to everybody. So there's no sense in keeping it secret that, you know, we can't write it in books. Prabhupada repeats the mantra, the Maha mantra, many times in his purports.
How do you counteract his accusation?
Because the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra has already been given to everybody.
I mean, his accusation of...
Could you move the mic closer? Yeah.
He said it's not in the text of the Charitamrita, so...
So it isn't.
Yeah.
But it's because it's so familiar. It doesn't have to be in the text. He's just nitpicking. There are other texts written by other associates of Lord Chaitanya, earlier associates like Rupa Goswami, that do mention the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra specifically. Is it mentioned in Chaitanya Bhagavat? It is, yeah. So there's no big secret. You know, the secret's already out. Before Chaitanya Charitamrita was written, it already had been presented in other books. There's nothing, there's no keeping it a secret. But his argument is that Prabhupada made it up and that Lord Chaitanya didn't chant Hare Krishna. But there's counter evidence to that in many other authorized books. Anyway, they have to find something to pick apart. Okay, anything else up, or I'll move on? Okay. Na tu parameshvarasyaiva tat tad yogyata sambhavad varnamatrasya tatoktik stuti rupai veiti mantavyam. We should not think that because all these qualities can be ascribed correctly only to the Supreme Lord Himself, it is only exaggerated praise for these mere syllables to be spoken of thus. So this is not the Mimamsa argument that praise of the Supreme Lord in the Vedas is only artavad. Here we're hearing from those who have faith in the Supreme Lord, but somehow they don't have faith in his names. You know, very, very unadvanced devotees who have a sentiment for the Supreme Lord but don't understand that his name is the same as him. And so somebody might think that these are actually qualities of God that are being glorified, and it's just metaphorically that these qualities are being assigned to his names. The names are just words. They don't have the actual qualities of the Lord. That's, somebody may think like that. Avatarantara vat parameshvarasyaiva varna rupen avataro yam iti. Like the Supreme Lord's other avatars, his name is also an avatar of his. He's got other expanded forms. He takes different forms, different from his original form. They're his avatars when he shows them in the material world. So his name is also another avatar of the original Supreme Lord. Asmin arte tenaiva shruti balen angikrite tadabedena tatsambhavat. If his name is also an avatar of his, but in the form of verbal sound. There's sound, and then there is language. There can be what we call inarticulate sound. Music, or the sounds made by animals, these are not verbal. The words that come out of the mouth of human beings, that's verbal. His name is an avatar in the form of such verbal sound. If we accept this understanding on the authority of these same descriptions of Shruti, then certainly everything said can be true about the Lord's names, because the names are Him. They're an avatar of the Lord. Because the names are not non-different from Him. Tasman, Nama, Namidor, Abheda Eva. In conclusion, there is no difference between the name and the person named. Taruktam Padme Nama Chintamani Krishnash Chaitanya Rasavigraha Purnak Shudho Nityamukto Binatwan Nama Namino Iti. The Padma Purana states, the name Krishna is a magical Chintamani stone. It is the living embodiment of spiritual bliss. It is complete, pure, and eternally liberated, because the name and the person named are the same. Asyartaha. Now what this means. Namaiva chintamanihi sarvartha datritvat. In other words, the name itself is a chintamani stone because it bestows all desired things. Na kevalam tadrisham eva api tu chaitanyetyadi lakshano yak krishna sa eva sakshat. Not only that, it is Krishna himself who is characterized as being chit, or rather chaitanya, alive, and so on. Tatrahetu, abhinatvat iti. Why this is so is stated abhinatvat, because of the non-difference of the name and the thing named. Okay, commentary. Krishna and his self-same expansions descend to this world as avatars to take birth, enjoy pastimes, kill demons, and revive the principles of spiritual life. The Supreme Lord's names are also among his avatars. They are identical with him, existing eternally as divine sound in his original abode. Just like the avatars exist eternally in the spiritual world, and they sometimes come down to the material world, the names of the Lord exist eternally in the spiritual world. And they descend at certain times into the material world to facilitate the deliverance of the Lord's devotees. These names are not like words in ordinary language, in which a name is always different from what it names. A mere sign representing something else. That's the practical use of language. Just like we use money. Instead of having to barter and trade one item for another, we use pieces of paper and little pieces of metal as tokens of value. Like that, words are tokens of value. To tell you about a lion, I don't have to bring you the lion and show it to you. I just say the word lion and you understand what I'm talking about. It's much more practical than having to have all the things there that you want to talk about. Just use words. But that's material language. The sign, the word, is different than the thing. The word lion is not a lion. Nobody ever got eaten up by the word lion. But the names of the Lord are different. They're different than material names. They're no different from the Lord himself. The names of the Lord are amatra, compact beyond measure, infinitely small. And also anantamatra, all-inclusive. The subtle sound of the Lord's names can penetrate the densest matter and enter without hindrance the core of the heart. Yet they also embody the Supreme Lord and all his energies in their entirety. Penetration. In order to sever something, cut something, according to the Vaisheshika philosophy, in order to affect the action of cutting, like cutting down a tree, something very, very small has to enter the tree. Something has to penetrate it by being atomic in size, like the tip of the axe. Axe works because it has a very sharp edge. The edge should actually be a few atoms across. And then it's so fine it can enter. And then once it enters, the whole axe gets in there and it cuts up the tree. So this act of cutting requires penetration by a very, very small thing. So the names of the Lord also are the most subtle, and we could say the most small, because they can penetrate material energy and penetrate material consciousness. The subtle sound of the Lord's names can penetrate the densest matter and enter without hindrance the core of the heart. Yet they also embody the Supreme Lord and all his energies in their entirety. This is the purpose of the Anima City. You can become smaller than the smallest so you can penetrate dense matter. Like that, the holy names of the Lord have this Anima City that can penetrate our dense hearts. Whoops, what did I do? Looks like I closed the file. Open it again. Okay. Any questions? Yes, ma'am?
The word Nityamukta in that verse, is it just to say that the name is not having any material tinge?
Material which?
Any material tinge or something. Is that the... Any material tinge?
Yes. It's free from what? It's free from material contact, yeah. Material contamination. Because mukta is a relative idea. To be freed, we have to consider freed from what? It expects an ablative complement. You know, if you just say somebody's free, that's an incomplete statement. Free from what? Yeah. So in this case, it's free from contamination, material contamination. Yes, sir.
Can you please give us some reference about that holy name is Krishna Avatar, like we have it in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kali Kali Namurupi Krishna Avatar Namahoitahai.
Okay.
Sarvajaganistara, but this is like our recent literature, but maybe in Bhagavatam or in Vedas, you remember something.
Well, I don't know any others. We have the Narada Pancharatra that we read, that the Ashtakshara, the Narayan himself appears in his form as the Ashtakshara mantra. That mantra is Narayan. And there are similar statements like that. You probably could look in the Pancharatras that describe the chanting of various mantras. And there are probably many similar statements to that when these mantras are glorified. Okay. All right, we move on. Nanu tatavidam namadikam katam purushendriya janyam bhavati. Here's a Purvapaksha. But how is it that the Supreme Lord's name and other features take their birth in the senses of human beings? Well, I said take their birth. I translated it literally. Of course, they're eternal. That means they appear. So the thing is, if they're purely spiritual, how can they appear in our senses? How can we perceive them if they're purely spiritual? That's the Purvapaksha. Makes sense. Our senses usually can only perceive created things. Those things that are eternal and unchanging, we can't perceive with our senses. But we do perceive the names. It's not like you have to meditate for 10,000 years before you can even hear the name. We can perceive the name. Anybody can. So why is it, if it's transcendental, why is it perceivable by everybody? That's the Purvapaksha. Answer, na. Veda matrasya bhagavataiva purushendriyadish avirbhavanat. No, what happens rather is that the Lord himself makes all kinds of Vedic sound appear in the senses and other conscious faculties of human beings. So this is the Lord's arrangement that not only Om or any particular name of God, but all the Vedic sound is revealed to the senses of human beings, to the senses of the mind. They're accessible. Unlike the unmanifest forms of the Lord, unlike the personal forms of the Lord when he's not exhibiting himself publicly, which is most of the time. Most of the time, Krishna was here for 125 years, and for most of the 5 billion years of this, whatever, you know, billions of years of this age, he hasn't been present in all this day of Brahma. Only for a short fragment of time is he publicly visible. So he's mostly, Krishna is mostly invisible. But his names are available to everybody all the time. At least in those places where the devotees are chanting the names. Okay. Yatoktam ekadashe swayam Sri Bhagavata Shabda Brahma Sudurbodam iti arabhya mayo babrimitam bhumna brahmananta shaktina puteshu gosharupena viseshur neva lakshyate iti. As the personality of Godhead says in his own words in the 11th canto, in the passage that begins, the transcendental sound of the Vedas is very difficult to comprehend. He then says, as the unlimited, unchanging, and omnipotent personality of Godhead dwelling within all living beings, I personally establish the Vedic sound vibration in the form of Omkara within all living entities. It is thus perceived subtly, just like a single strand of fiber on a lotus stalk. Okay, this is describing how the Lord personally arranges for us to be able to perceive the Vedas. Especially in its seed form of Om, he puts that in our heart. Actually, the nada, or the original subtle form of Om, is there in everybody's heart. And the yogis, they can perceive it. They can perceive this transcendental original sound in the heart. That's been placed there by the Supreme Lord. And from that seed can manifest all the Vedas in anybody's heart. So otherwise, because it's transcendental substance, it would be imperceivable by living entities. But the Lord himself has put it into our hearts so we can perceive it. And then this metaphor is given. It is thus perceived subtly, just like a single strand of fiber on a lotus stalk. Is this right? Viseshu. Viseshu is the stalk, I think, of the lotus plant. And the urna is fiber. The lotus stalk is fibrous. It's got these little strands on it. But they're so thin that a single strand is not ordinarily perceived by the human eye. The bunch of the strands together can be perceived. So that's how Om is in our hearts. It's in that original nada form. Those who are not yogis can't perceive it. It's still invisible in the heart. But from it manifests the Om seed and then all the mantras of the Vedas. Because the seed is there in the heart, we can perceive, we can actually see with our own mind and senses the Vedas. Dvadashasya shashti Veda Vyasana Prasange Kshinayushat Ityadau Tika Cha. In the 6th chapter of the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, in the description of the editing of the Vedas, there is the statement beginning, diminished in lifespan, kshinayusha. I guess I quote that in the commentary. Which Sridhar Swami comments on by saying the following, tikacha, tarhi purusha buddhi prabhavatvam, na dharaniyam syad, ityashankyaha, vidistatyuta chodite ityesha. So Sridhar Swami comments, so should this be disregarded on the grounds that it is derived from the intelligence of human beings? That means, should this, I don't know what we're talking about here, name of the Lord or Vedic sound, whatever the context is, should we not take it seriously because it's been manifested by the power of human intelligence? No. Anticipating this question, he, the speaker of the verse, says, inspired by Lord Achyuta sitting in the heart, the Vedic sound becomes manifest to us not because it's material, but because Lord Vishnu personally makes it manifest. He enters our heart and plants the seed of Om. Okay. Kasmayena vibhashito yam ityadau tad rupen yadivat. In like fashion, the verse beginning, this Bhagavatam was spoken to Brahma in the very last chapter of the Bhagavatam, verse 19, which is almost the very last verse of the Bhagavatam. There's the words tad rupena, which means by him, the Bhagavatam was spoken to Brahma by him in that form, in the form of the Bhagavatam itself. The Bhagavatam was spoken to Brahma, and then was, I don't know what's the, okay, let's find it. Tadrupena cha naradaya munaye. So Brahma then, after receiving the transcendental, the light of transcendental knowledge from Vishnu, he imparted it then to Narada, and the word is tadrupena, in the form of that transcendental sound. Brahma introduced Narada to the Supreme Absolute Truth. I have to make a note. We have Vibhasito quoted by Jiva Goswami, but in our Bhagavatam it says Vibhasito. Let me just make a note of that. Where? Damn, hold on a second. I'm sorry. Yes, but the Bhagavatam, as we, our print, a BBT edition of the Bhagavatam has dental S. Okay. I'm just making a note so I can inform the readers that these are two different readings. Hare Krishna, hold on 1 second. Why is that Tamil? Okay. Okay. Commentary. The holy names and other features of the Supreme Lord are never born, not at the time of being uttered, or even at the time of the universe's creation. They, the holy names and other features of the Lord, are eternal, but appear where and when they please. By Nama, the names of the Lord, one can know and attain Adhikam. Everything else he is, because the text said Nama Adhikam. First you know the name, and then you can know everything else about the Lord. Because these names describe his forms and activities. In ordinary language also, words consist of both sound and meaning. In transcendental language, however, the meaning is not just a thought or image of the real thing, but the thing itself. The word is the thing in transcendental language. The personality of Godhead acting through his helpmate Shaktis of compassion and verbal expression makes the eternal sound of the Vedas descend into the senses, minds, and hearts of the human beings. The Lord himself arranges for this, and he makes use, he takes help from his two energies, his energy of speech and his energy of compassion, to place the Vedic sound within the hearts of the living entities. Animals cannot understand the Vedas, nor can animal-like humans, who are forbidden to hear the Vedas. Every human being has some kind of articulate language. Some speak the original language in its Vedic and Sanskrit dialects. Some speak languages derived from the original by corruption, including dozens of forms of Prakrit and hundreds of Indo-European languages. And some speak the thousands of other languages with no direct connection to the original. The single strand of filament membrane on a lotus stalk, the single strands, there are many strands, but the single strands are very difficult to discern with the naked eye. Similarly, Om is correctly perceived only with very focused attention. Yogis have to practice many years to achieve this focus. As Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, in the footnote is missing. Okay, I guess I had it above. Anyway, Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto, Shabda Brahma Sudurbodham Pranindriya Manomayam Anantapadam Gambiram Durvigayam Samudravat. The transcendental sound of the Vedas. No, wait, this was quoted in the text? Yeah, just the words, Shabda Brahma Sudurbodham. That's the beginning of the passage. So the actual first verse is, the transcendental sound of the Vedas is very difficult to comprehend and manifests on different levels within the prana, senses, and mind. This Vedic sound is unlimited, very deep and unfathomable, just like the ocean. And then the verse that's quoted comes after that. Mayopa Brimhitam Bhumna. As the unlimited, unchanging, and omnipotent personality of Godhead, dwelling within all living beings, I personally establish the Vedic sound vibration in the form of Omkar within all living entities. It is thus perceived subtly, just like a single strand of fiber on a lotus stalk. Continuing the commentary, the history of the editing and dissemination of the Vedic corpus at the beginning of the current age, 5,000 years ago, is told by the Bhagavatam's 12th canto. In chapter 6, Suta Goswami replies to a request from the sages headed by Shonaka that he recount how Pila and the other students of Krishna Dwaipayana Vyasa edited the Vedas and passed them down through generations of their disciples. Sutta says, Kshanayusha, that's the word that's quoted by Jiva Goswami, and the whole verse is, Kshinayusha Kshinasattvan Durmedan vikshakalataha Vedan brahmarshayo vyasyan Riddhi statuta choditaha. Observing that people in general were diminished in their lifespan, kshinayusha, strength and intelligence by the influence of time, great sages took inspiration from the personality of Godhead sitting within their hearts and systematically divided the Vedas. So it's said here that the sages, when they divided up the Vedic knowledge, they took inspiration for doing that from the Lord, Supreme Lord, in their hearts. Continuing, the Vedas were revealed by Brahma at the beginning of creation. But as each age passed, knowledge of them became less and less perfect. By the end of Dwarpa Yuga, they were practically lost, the Vedas. At that time, the Supreme Lord inspired Vyas and the rishis trained by him to revive the Vedic tradition. Vedic rishis are especially pure persons capable of hearing the direction of the Supersoul. They hear the lost mantras of the Vedas in their meditation and broadcast them in human society. Later sages did not have this power to receive mantras in meditation, but they heard and repeated faithfully, perpetuating the tradition as Shrutarshis, sages who hear rather than see directly. The original sages see the mantras, or they perceive them directly. Later rishis simply hear them in disciplic succession. The disciplic succession of Vedic enlightenment began with Brahma's receiving it from Lord Narayana. And in its distilled essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, it was deposited in the hands of Sri Shukadev for the benefit of the unfortunate souls of Kali Yuga. Kasmai yena vibhasito yamatulo jnana pradipak pura tadrupena chanada daya munaye krishnaya tadrupina yogindraya tanatmanata bhagavad rataya kanunyatas tachudham vimalam vishokam abritam satyam param dimahi. This is the 19th verse of the last chapter of the Bhagavatam, which only has 23 verses. And some people say the 23rd verse is colophon. It's not actually part of the text. So it's almost the very end of the Bhagavatam, and it's reflecting the words of the very first verse, Satyam Param Dhimahi. So that proves that the meditation on the Satyam Param is the main theme of the Bhagavatam, because it's mentioned at the very beginning and the very end. Translation of this verse: I meditate upon that pure and spotless Supreme Absolute Truth, who is free from suffering and death, and who in the beginning personally revealed this incomparable torchlight of knowledge to Brahma. Brahma then spoke it to the sage Narada, who narrated it to Krishna Dwaipayana Vyasa. Srila Vyasa revealed this Bhagavatam to the greatest of sages, Shukadev Goswami, and Shukadev mercifully spoke it to Maharaj Parikshit. This is the Vedic disciplic succession. Bhagavatam is the essence of the Vedas. Okay, any questions? Bhartram?
What is the connection between this verse, that last one, that Vibhashito and Tadrupena? I couldn't quite get it.
Okay, what Jiva Goswami takes from that verse is, well, the point is that Tadrupena says that the Lord Tadrupena refers to whom? It's an adverb. Well, it looks like Brahma spoke it in that form. Yeah, I marked it because I'm a little confused about that. It's adverbial phrase. Somebody did something in that same form. But is it talking about Vishnu talking to Brahma or Brahma talking to Narada? It's in the second line. It looks like it goes with Brahma speaking to Narada. Brahma described this Towards light of knowledge was revealed by Vishnu to Brahma, and then it was spoken by Narada, by Brahma to Narada in that form. So the point Jiva Goswami is making, is that it's directly the Supreme Lord Himself. How that's, I'm not so sure how that works.
Because the theme was that uttering by senses, material senses, how there can be the manifestation of the spiritual name.
But the answer to it was that, this is what we're talking about here. The answer to that question is that the Lord Himself arranged to manifest the Vedas in the hearts of the living entities. So here we have that verse that says that first Vishnu gave the Vedas, revealed the Vedas to Brahma, and Brahma took it in that same form and gave it to Narada. Actually, we're talking about the Bhagavatam here, the essence of the Vedas. It was revealed by Vishnu to Brahma, and then Brahma gave it to Narada in the same form. So that seems to be indicating that's how human beings can have access to the transcendental sound, because the first person in the discussion got it directly from the Supreme Lord. By the Lord's power, he was able to make the unmanifest manifest to a living entity. And then, preserving that same form, Brahma was able to give it to Narada, and Narada was able to give it to Vyasa, and so on. Because the disciplic succession was initiated by the Lord Himself, using His personal powers of mercy and transcendental expression. Yes?
When the word Hrid in Shastra, what level of what faculty does it refer to? Mind, intelligence, or ego, or what?
Rid is the seat of Chaitanyam, consciousness, isn't it? It's described when the universal form, the different deities entered the different parts of the universal form. Lord Vasudeva, the Lord of consciousness, entered the heart. So that's what goes on. It's heart is the seat of the actual consciousness. The mind and intelligence are just functions of consciousness, but the actual self-awareness of the living entity is located where he is, in the heart.
It's an abstract thing.
Yeah, more it's actually abstract. What it really means is that consciousness, where's the consciousness? In the living entity. But where's the living entity? In the heart. So therefore the consciousness is in the heart. You know, it's by what do you call that? Anyway, it's the only reason why we say that the consciousness is in the heart is because the living entity is in the heart. It's really in the living entity. Consciousness is a quality of the living entity. Wherever the living entity is, that's where you'll find the consciousness. We're supposed to know that, so the speakers can become poetic and talk about consciousness being in the heart, and we shouldn't be confused by that, because we're supposed to know the philosophy that, you know, consciousness is a quality of the soul. Any student of logic learns that. Knowing that, we can deal with the poetic expression, consciousness appearing in the heart, and we can figure out what that actually means. Because we know our philosophy well, we can indulge in poetry. Okay, anything else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.